Chapter 1. Montana Territory, September 23, 1886. 5 miles southeast of Morgan's Crossing, near his favorite fishing hole, Rye Doc Rollins saw the biggest gold-darn deer ever seen in the West. He leaped from the saddle. Heart racing, he braced his rifle against a crack in a granite boulder and took aim at the patch of dun hide he glimpsed through the cottonwoods and aspens. He was a lousy shot. Had already missed on a 10-point buck 2 hours ago. This time, steady, steady, he told himself, blocking out the rustle of the river to his right. He drew a breath, held it, slowly let it out, waiting to locate the sweet spot behind the foreleg that would mean a merciful, clean kill. As Rye stared, the animal lifted its head and peered at him. The shape of the head wasn't right, the jaw too heavy, the black nostrils wide and flaring to get his scent. He registered that the animal was a horse, not a deer. A fear response kicked in. He could be strung up for killing someone's horse, and he shouted, "Ho!" Simultaneously, out of the choicest fishing hole in this part of Montana rose a water nymph, breasts gleaming beneath a cascade of water. The cool liquid sluiced off a mane of deep red hair, and bared a face and shoulders only Botticelli could paint. He shouted again in panic, "Ho!" So the sounds he'd made came out, embarrassingly, "Ho, ho!" as if he were humoring children on the eve of Christmas. The woman, likely in her early 20s, stared at him, eyes in shadow, the pupils no doubt wide in fear, her chest rising in panicked breaths. His manly parts responded. Though he was a man of faith, the two events together jolted him as apparitions might were he to find himself alone on a stormy night in an abandoned house. However, his heart and mind were not to have a reprieve. A second woman of similar age, blonde and equally lush, burst out of the deep pool. When she saw Rye, she screamed, sending icicles along his spine. Then a third appeared, dark-haired and slight, not yet 20, he guessed. She jumped in fright and clapped her hands over small, high breasts, sinking up to her chin to hide herself. A part of Rye's brain that loved women was at once shocked and thrilled. But when a last female came up, laughing and sputtering, saw him, stared like the first without a scream, Rye glanced away, for she was but a child of 13 or 14. What to do? If he mounted his horse, he would have a clear view of the four females, but they would deeply resent him taking their full measure. On the other side, but for the child, it would be a pleasure few men would ever experience and therefore not to be missed. He and his mining buddies were short on women in the camp, and these women were beautiful treasures. If he took another look, Reverend Norton, who'd be preaching in Morgan's Crossing sometime soon, surely would absolve him. But for the child. While he debated, one of the women said sternly, "You look again and I'll have your eyes in my sights." Reflexively, Rye glanced her way, the redhead. She beat it down on him with a big bore rifle, naked, gleaming, and armed. She drew back the bolt with a snap. "I said, I'm not. He reached for his stud's trailing reins, took a step toward the stirrup. Metal clicked when she shot the bolt. "Don't you move," she demanded. He froze. Water gurgled and splashed. She was no doubt getting out of the pool, reaching for her clothes.
"Missouri?"
The high voice of the young girl. "Get dressed," came the curt response. Splashing, splashing, murmuring, then silence. "Look now," he asked, all politeness. "Ma'am?" He didn't relish trying to patch a hole in his chest, though he'd done it once on a miner in California who'd lived to tell about it. Neither did he like the target his shoulders and back made. Slowly he turned. All four were mounted bareback, holding some fine horseflesh with just rope hackamores. A dark-faced foal peeked from the bushes. The redhead was up on the dun mare he'd almost shot. The child rode the biggest red quarter horse he'd ever laid eyes on. He took off his summer straw, ducked his head, and said, "Ma'am? Ma'ams?" The four of them, the redhead, the blonde, a slender, almost boyish gal with her dark hair in a knot, and the girl, all had the same classical features, though only the stunning redhead and the blonde sister had voluptuous curves beneath that menswear, dungarees, well-worn cotton shirts, boots, felt hats in hand. Missouri, the redhead, slipped her hat on and trained the big boar on him. He thought he might carry the picture seared in his memory. The youngster and the one with small breasts looked at each other and smiled. They put on their hats, deepening the charm of the picture. The aspen leaves turning gold around them, the pool reflecting the scene. A perfect Charlie Russell subject. Though their men's work attire was disconcerting, Rye relaxed a fraction.
"Rye Rollins," he said, "of the San Francisco Rollins. We're in shipping. My father's the mayor. I truly mean you no harm."
"What are you doing snooping around here?" said the redhead, as if the place was hers.
"This is my favorite fishing hole and reflecting spot, ma'am."
"Huh, I don't see a pole." She kept the rifle trained, but slid a quick look at his horse. "Nice looking stud." He nodded. Black Bart, named after the poet stage robber of San Francisco, was the last remnant of his former comfortable life. The animal was lifting his fine bone head, stretching his top lip, scenting the mare. "Looks to have some thoroughbred in him." Rye stepped toward Bart to pat his withers, but the stern voice said,
"Stop! Don't you move!"
He paused.
"I was going to say he's a half-brother to Ben Ali."
"The Derby winner?" Apparent surprise made her alto voice rise.
"Yes, ma'am. He's 3 seasons older, out of a quarter-horse dam."
"Quarter, huh?"
"The dam had some Arab in her."
"Accounts for the chiseled head, the big eyes."
"Gave him staying power, too. He can do 25 miles without breaking a sweat."
"Huh," she said.
"Missouri," said the child. "I'm hungry."
"All right, Phelan, hold your horses."
Rye chuckled. The redhead scowled. Rye sobered. "You following the river?"
"Why?"
"There's a welcome party tonight in Morgan's Crossing, about 5 miles downstream. Mrs. Morgan has enticed a friend from St. Louis to run the boarding house, Miss Bertha Buckles by name. Everyone's invited."
"Can we?"
begged Phelan.
"No."
"Aw, Missouri, we ain't had fun in ages."
Missouri gave her full attention to the girl. "Don't say ain't, Phelan. We'll see." To Rye, she said, "What time's this party?" At the thought of interacting more with this woman, he couldn't help the prick to his senses. Old Obadiah might play the fiddle. Surely there'd be dancing. These women would add a mighty boost to the social scene. The miners would go nuts, himself included, but he'd have the inside track. He picked the redhead for himself. He liked a strong woman who made him toe the mark, and he plumb liked a western hat on a gal.
"About supper time," he said. He glanced downstream. "Follow the river for a few miles. Cross where the big log has fallen. You'll know it. Stay on the track and cross again at the split rocks, and keep coming, or you can head west about 2 miles, till you see a wagon road. It comes from Sweetwater Springs. Take it to the right. The land drops down some, but gentle-like."
"Not that will surely come, but thank you, Mr. Rollins." He touched the brim of his straw.
"The town isn't any Frisco, but the people are decent, mostly. We've got several married couples, plus the new wife, Prudence Morgan, from St. Louis. You ladies will be safe. Count on me."
"We'll count on ourselves," she corrected. She lifted the reins, backed the mare. "Come on, girls."
"Your names," Rye called.
"Harper, the Missouri Harpers." She touched the mare's flanks, the animal stepped adroitly, and the women and the girl faded into the trees. Rye felt for a moment that he'd conjured them from dreams or from a novel, and then the longing for the redhead seeped into him and began to make his heart ache. Minutes later, as they rode toward the wagons, Missouri's heart tripped a wild beat. Although her face was still warm from embarrassment, Rye Rollins had single-handedly brought the Western cowboy into reality. He was the stuff of her dreams. Tall, square-jawed, wide of shoulder and narrow of hip, with a ready smile, nice manners, and a fine horse. She imagined him holding her in his strong arms as they waltzed, his warmth bleeding through his cotton shirt and that friendly grin stealing her breath away. "Pure nonsense," she chided. She had a horse farm to build, no time for courting.
"That man was handsome," said Phelan, putting a hand over her heart.
"Beware the handsome fellow," Missouri said. She cut a glance at Susan, riding the bay mare. Phelan saw it and looked at her hands, gripping the reins. Color came into her cheeks. Her baby sister was young but wise.
They had all suffered from the mistake and judgment Susan had made, being seduced by an unseemly man. "Come on, honey," Missouri said. "Let's get some food, then hitch up the horses and mules. We'll want to be in town before the light fades."
"Won't Aunt Gwen be surprised, Missy?"
"I believe she will. We didn't say when we'd arrive." Phelan rode ahead to chatter with Jessamine, who was riding her favorite, the gray broodmare, Dancy. The mare's dappled colt, Traveler, raced about, trotted back, nuzzled its mother, and bounced away. Dancy and Jess were a match. Jessamine's dark hair, set free from its knot, lifted in long, lacy tendrils in the breeze, and Dancy's luxurious black tail swept the ground. Missouri thought, "At least I've made sure my sisters and I are clean and presentable when we meet Aunt Gwenllian." They'd need to change into dresses to complete the picture of what they were, refined young ladies, although Missouri at 25 was practically a refined old spinster. The two Harper brothers, her father and uncle, had had money and married well. Their brides, educated best friends from New York, had remained in contact, despite Uncle William and Aunt Gwenllian jumping off to the Montana Territory many years back. Left to raise her growing family of daughters in the wilderness of Missouri without a best friend near, Mama Harper had carried on her high standards for etiquette, generosity to others, and a sense of fairness. She had inspired in her girls a belief in the values, rights, and privileges due to all citizens equally in the glorious American Republic. Missouri chuckled in appreciation at the memories. Women must not subjugate themselves to men's wills, Mama had insisted many times. Though she was a Presbyterian, all her life Mama would be influenced by the suffragette activities of her younger years. Marriage was to be a partnership, not a dictatorship. She had taught the girls that appearances and self-respect counted, that they should improve themselves as far as was possible in life and not leave the difficult business of running things to the men. Cleanliness, her mother had always said, was next to godliness. However, an egalitarian spirit and strength of character hold sway over all. Missouri's heart pinched at the loss of her mother, and she missed her papa too. His hard work and his open-mindedness in regard to women's roles had seen Missouri through college and a veterinarian degree from Cornell when it just wasn't done. Susan, through 2 years of study and drawing, though she was widely read on agriculture, and Jessamine, through to a degree in the classics that would provide depth to her writing. And Phelan, well, Mama had seen to it her youngest child had a fine background in the basics, until Mama and Papa's tragic deaths last fall. Though Missouri longed for her mother, she supposed due to her medical training she was more pragmatic than most women and did not dwell on tragedy. After all, there was far too much to do in life. With visions of a soft feather bed, elegant meals, and refined conversation urging her toward her aunt's ranch, situated across the creek from Morgan's Crossing, she nudged her mount, and the four young women left the trees. They moved at a trot toward two wagons covered by canvas bonnets, sheltering beneath the shade of granite outcropping set amid the golden prairie. Night winds swept these rolling hills at high elevation, chilling them till their lips were blue. After months of overland travel, her aunt's fine home was looking better and better. Their farm animals grazed on sparse grasses near their foreman, Rio, who was leaning against a wagon, repairing harness, and their chickens scratched underfoot. When Rio saw the girls riding in, he began to scoop up his feathered friends. Two wagons comprised their worldly goods and the seeds of their future life, along with two mules, two percherons, four riding horses of good stock, a spring colt, Rio's mustang, the chickens, Phelan's cat, and Stowe the cow, named after their mother's author friend. Missouri's heart swelled to know they'd come this far without losing anything but a chicken, and that to a two-legged thief in the caravan they'd left behind in Miles City. After a cold dinner of beans, cornbread, and smoked venison, they set the workhorses and mules into their traces and saddled up. The girls dressed like men and rode like men, their best camouflage. Missouri rode the dun mare alongside Jessamine's Dancy and Phelan's big red gelding, Moses, while Susan took her turn driving the wagon drawn by the mules, her saddle horse tied behind. Trailed by his mustang, Rio drove the other wagon, his hands tanned mahogany after months of driving, his face set to possible danger. Though he seemed ageless, Rio was 44, a vaquero with no name and no past, originally from New Mexico territory, and her late father's overseer. He was taciturn, whipcord strong, and savvy about everything from foaling to water systems, crops, repairs, and provisioning. He was a crack shot and had brought the sisters venison, rabbit, beaver, and elk on the trip west. Most of all, he was a trusted friend, willing to work without wages on the journey and for the initial years it would take to prove up the homestead acres she and Susan had purchased. Missouri had told Rio she could not pay him a wage, giving him a chance to find another job. At talk of wages, Rio had not answered her. He had simply gone to the barn and begun outfitting the mules and Percherons with harnesses sturdy enough for 4 months of travel across scorched plains, swift streams, mud holes, and mountain passes. Although Rio would never acknowledge the deep affection the Harper girls felt for him, Missy sensed the affection was returned. There seemed to be no apparent joy in him, but his gentleness with the creatures and an unequal diligence made the Harpers forgive his secret heart and feel grateful beyond words he was with them. Still following the watercourse, they circled flat-top buttes, keeping well away from the thick stands of hardwoods, pines, and willows, crowding the waterway. Entering from the east, they came into a small valley. Missouri hoped this was Morgan's Valley, where the town lay, but was disappointed to see no habitation but a coyote traveling across the fall prairie grass. The mountains to the south fell further into the distance, purple with haze. They wound through a series of meadows divided by ridges of rock and cactus, the water far below rushing and slowing by turns. Keeping to the track others had trod before them, including Rye Rollins and his magnificent horse. They crossed and recrossed the river and dry creek beds, and even a few streams still flowing, with rills that fed the bigger stream. At every step the sun pelted down. Missouri lifted her wide-brimmed felt hat, fanned her face. She glanced at Rio. He seemed not to suffer in the heat the way she and her sisters did. Brown face set, he never relented, sweeping his gaze across the arroyos, the gulches, the rocks that could hide rattlesnakes, the foothills rising into blue-gray range of mountains ahead to the northwest. In a high gulch, a cabin nestled among the pines, no smoke rising. Lonesome and primitive, Missouri thought, and was glad of her family. She wondered about Rio's thoughts. Was he reminded of his home somewhere in New Mexico territory? Would he love this new land? Or miss the green of her home state? Would she? Their caravan had followed the curving water for the time it took to eat up 4 or 5 miles, pulling 2 wagons, and now the water bent west toward the hazy mountains. They rounded a bend, and a pretty valley opened up.
"Look, Missy,"
called Phelan, and they all held their breath for a moment.
"Is that it? Are we almost there?"
Unfortunately, they were not. Nary a cabin or general store in sight. "Soon, pet, soon," soothed Missouri. "Remember that cowboy said 5 miles.
"Oh, Jess," cried the 14-year-old. "We're almost to heaven."
"Don't blaspheme, sweet one," said Jessamine, fluffing the front of her plaid men's shirt to let out the heat. But she was smiling. "We'll have fine food and a feather bed tonight, I'll warrant."
"But we shall go to the party first," Phelan insisted, face aglow. "Missy said."
The sisters chuckled indulgently. Her baby sister only expressed what they all felt. Missouri was saddle-weary, sunburned, and tired of living in a tent, the responsibility of seeing to the safety of her younger sisters constantly in her mind. The girls were just as tired of the journey and eager for community as she was. Community meant less fear for them all. She had enjoyed their great adventure, true enough, but she was also hungry for the safety of 4 solid walls and protections from predators of every stripe. Anticipation riffled through her. Missouri hadn't told the Westerner they had been headed for Morgan's Crossing all along. The 4 months traveling through the territories had made her cautious of men, and she hadn't mentioned they were intending to beg shelter from their aunt and live in the comfort of the ranch house, a veritable mansion according to Auntie's letters of years gone by. Hopefully there was room in the barn for at least the brood mares until she and Rio could gauge the safety of the valley. Though Missouri kept an eye out for wolves and hostiles as the wagons edged around the base of another ridge, the notion of seeing Mr. Rollins and company played at the edges of her thoughts. Would the Morgan couple believe in music and dancing? She fancied a lively reel or a waltz. What woman didn't? Despite her keen focus on the horse farm and a kind of grinding self-discipline, she was always glad for a turn with a fine-looking gentleman. What did her aunt think of this man, Rye Rollins of the San Francisco Rollins? Would it be fitting to dance with him? Even so, Missouri could make up her own mind. Mr. Rollins had been a gentleman, after all, calling out a warning rather than hide in the bushes and stare his fill. She'd seen warmth in his eyes, but not lasciviousness. Before she could speculate more on the dancing, she felt pity. Her aunt would be serving with the other widows, not dancing with her husband. Missouri had heard mining was a dangerous business, so surely there were other women of a similar situation to befriend her. She hoped her aunt fared well, but if she were blue with heartache, she would at least have four lively young women to cheer her. And Auntie would cheer them. Soon Missouri and her sisters would rest on fine upholstered furniture and bask in the wealth of their only remaining family. Wealth, Aunt Gwenllian had written 8 or 9 years ago. Then she and Uncle William had spent years making a go of the 160-acre cattle ranch they'd bought from a former owner. That news, an unknown venture for the couple, on a relatively small piece of land for a ranch, had concerned Missouri's father, who, years ago, had served one half of his fractured country and multiplied his own wealth, raising horses for the Union Army. After worrying the family, sometime later, Aunt Gwen had written that their fortune had been improved by Mr. Morgan's mining operation and the beneficence of the Lord, and Papa had been somewhat mollified. Missouri remembered the many family discussions around the supper table. Her aunt and uncle had been the heroes of her own secret dreams of adventure. Now we're following in their footsteps. Improved? What had Aunt Gwen meant?
Missy, said Phelan, riding over, Jess and I have decided we'll hope for Aunt Gwen's raspberry jam on hot biscuits.
For breakfast or at the social? She asked, amused.
At the party, silly, said Phelan. What'll you hope for?
I'll say, she held her breath. So hard to choose.
What? Asked Phelan.
Her blueberry tarts, said Missouri, laughing. She was nearly weak with anticipation of those delights. Aunt Gwen's letters had often tantalized her eager readers with details of her compotes and preserves. Apple, plum, raspberry, blackcurrant. Her neighbors, claimed Auntie, were fond of her prickly pear jam and her blueberry tarts. Missouri's mouth watered. What else might be had at the Morgan's party? This occupied the conversation as the schooners followed the water downstream. At last, the path bent northwest, edged on the far bank by a barbed wire fence that wove through the willows. The bark on the stems within reach had been stripped by hungry cattle. The land opened into a great valley of rolling hills, the grasses turned golden by dry winds. The prairie rose in the distance to hills studded with rocks and stubby pines, and beyond, thick forest, the sheer faces of red rock, and then the mountains. And over all, a cloudless dome that was the deepest blue Missouri had ever seen. It was a big place, sweeping, majestic. And when Missouri's heart quickened in eagerness, she warned herself of the struggle to survive that lay ahead. In this arid land, she would need to irrigate, to grow wheat, or even a kitchen garden, and was glad of the water that edged their acres. She was near breathless to see their homestead for the first time, to see what was needed and what would sustain them. Phelan leaned over to pat the neck of her 17-hand sorrel gelding, Moses.
We're almost there, she reassured him.
Moses nodded onward, his lower lip flapping like an elderly steed's, though he was only 5, the quickest quarter horse at roundups and the gentlest beast in their stable. Their father had bought the colt unseen from the King Ranch in Texas, hoping for new blood for his own brand. But Moses didn't have the confirmation her father was looking for, so he'd gelded the colt and trained him to cut horses from the Remuda. It would be at least 2 years before Traveler could be bred, and Missouri was without a stallion as she tried to establish a horse ranch. Traveler's sire, a well-known and respected stallion, had been killed in the same storm that had taken her parents. She thought again of Mr. Rollins' stud and wondered if they could come to some kind of arrangement. While she was musing about her horses, cattle appeared on the hills. They passed telegraph poles. There were ranches on her left now. They came up out of a depression and climbed one more hill. Missouri glanced up. Through the trees, they glimpsed a well-trodden wagon road to their left, running parallel to their approach and just this side of the river. A railed bridge ahead spanned the water as it flowed northwest, and beyond, another smaller stream looked as if it intersected like an X with the main river, this one flowing northeast.
Missy, a town!
Yes, Pet, I see it. We're here at last. Sure enough, backlit by the lowering sun and snug set between the two waterways, a straggle of wooden buildings rose into the gloaming. Sharp pointed shadows reached out from the structures toward the approaching caravan.
It don't look like much, said Phelan,
an edge of excitement nonetheless making her tone high.
Doesn't,
corrected Missouri, struck by a pang of foreboding.
Some don't make a show of their wealth, said Jessamine,
sounding brave but disappointed.
At least we'll have a real bed, said Susan,
flicking the mule's driving reins.
Andale, mijas,
said Rio, snapping his own reins, his way of expressing eagerness, Missouri supposed. The Percherons, Betsy and Vesta, nodded to one another and plodded on.
Had they come the wrong way? Was this scrap of village the town? Missouri squinted to her left, where the road forked after the bridge, and saw at least one two-story structure, gray with burgundy trim and a nice white porch. Perhaps that was the Harper Ranch house? Let it be.
No, no, she corrected. The barn was too small, and the house had no acreage. Missouri rose in her stirrups to have a better look at the area. A line to the right of the gray home, a few shacks, a second two-story with a false front, a couple of other buildings, more cabins, some tents. In the other direction, the fork led a winding way out of town and disappeared around the shoulder of a bulky mountain. Across the water from town, on the outside curve of the smaller stream, lay pale buildings with missing windows and a briar of broken fences. The Harper Ranch? Missouri's stomach clutched. It couldn't be, and yet the place stood exactly where Auntie had written it would be. When they came closer to the village, they crossed the main river at a wide spot, and the trail began to follow the stream. They arrived at a humble crossroads. A plank bridge on the left gave access to the town, and on the right, a wagon path followed the chief waterway west, its left bank edged with bits of fencing that stretched into the distance. What was left of Harper fencing, no doubt? As Missouri's group kept going toward the ranch, they saw people in town walking about, mostly men, hair slicked back or bound, shirts tucked, boots shined, the populace evidently heading toward the social. Missouri searched for Mr. Rollins but didn't see him. The townsfolk stopped and stared. Some pointed. Phelan waved. Susan looked away and Missouri and Jess nodded, even while their party kept following the lesser stream, driving beneath a canopy of old oaks, pines, and cottonwoods, where the air cooled their cheeks. The wheels of the wagons creaked and the harness jingled, sounds familiar to Missouri yet heightened by emotions coursing through her. One feeling was dread. Another was a strange, insistent longing to see the Western stranger.